From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, June 10th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine State Police officials on Monday are disputing reports that the gunman in the Lewiston mass shooting had been at a firing range with a friend hours before the rampage last October. Kevin Miller reports.
The detail that a supposed friend had gone to the range with Robert Card earlier that day was contained in a trove of roughly 3,000 pages of documents on the Lewiston shootings released by state police on Friday afternoon. But Shannon Moss, a spokesperson for the Maine Department of Public Safety, said Monday that other documents in the massive data files show that report turned out to be false. But Moss said the Maine Attorney General's office decided not to charge the individual for the false report. The thousands of pages of documents were only online for a few hours before state police officials took them down due to, quote, technical issues. But during that time and afterward, media organizations dove into the heavily redacted police reports, search warrants, and other documents looking for new information on the worst mass shooting in Maine history. Public access to the documents was not restored until Monday afternoon. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
An ex-girlfriend of the man responsible for the Lewiston mass shooting says she was not planning to be at either location the night of the attacks and doesn't believe she was a target. There have been suggestions that shooter Robert Card may have been after certain people. As Susan Sharon reports, documents released by Maine State Police on Friday are once again pointing to his state of mind.
Many of the 3,000 pages released by police about their shooting investigation are heavily redacted, and some of the information has been shared before. But they reveal that an unidentified person told them that Card's ex-girlfriend was in a bowling league and that she could have easily been at just-in-time recreation on Wednesday, October 25th, at the time of the first attack. Joanna Carr, who dated Card for several months until early 2023, says that's not the case.
No, I never bowled in a league and never with him, just socially.
Carr, who has avoided speaking publicly until now, says she and Robert Carr did play cornhole together and she was in a league at Schmengi's Bar and Grill. For a while, she had gone on Wednesday nights, but at the time of the shootings was playing on Tuesdays. She says Carr would have known that by using an app on his cell phone.
You guys could download that and see I was only registered on Tuesday, not Wednesday. So that's technically public knowledge. Who would have been there that night and I wasn't on that list?
Carr says she broke up with Card because of his erratic behavior. He got easily annoyed over small things and she couldn't see a future with him. But she also says he never got angry or aggressive with her and that their breakup was uneventful. Instead, she says Card talked about how he thought the manager of Schmengi's disliked him and was calling him a pedophile behind his back. She thought it was odd, but assured him that wasn't true.
I think the pedophile stuff started because of my kids. It initiated because he would hang out at Schmengi's with my kids while I was there playing cornhole. And after we broke up, he said he'd commented people were calling him pedophile.
Card briefly dated another woman who also played cornhole, she says. After the two of them broke up, she says he stopped going to Schmengi's and she never saw him again. But she wonders if she missed red flags and if there was something she could have done to get him help.
But the more I read about all the people that try to get help, his son, his ex-wife, the more helpless I feel for myself. And for all the other people, because despite the efforts that so many people tried, at the end of the day, I feel like if anyone asked for help, it was him.
After their breakup, Carr says she received a few text messages from Card, asking her if she'd like to get back together for bowling or some other activity. She says in one long message, which she didn't find until after the October shootings, Card said people were insulting him and that he couldn't make others understand. Carr says he closed the message by telling her that she would do great in life. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Maine State Police are distributing blue envelopes to guide officers in traffic stops involving drivers with developmental and behavioral conditions. The Blue Envelope program is intended for drivers diagnosed with autism, Down syndrome, PTSD, or similar disorders. Nick Song has more.
The envelope can hold a driver's license, vehicle registration, and other documents typically requested at a traffic stop. A message on the back of the envelope states the driver has a disability and may appear fidgety or nervous as a result. Erica Koch is the founder of Down Syndrome Advocacy Project, who organized the initiative. She says the envelopes can help ease a potentially stressful situation.
So it gives the officer a heads up that maybe the lights are triggering them or the sound from their radio. So it gives the officer a little more information on what they're walking into. And it also gives families peace of mind knowing that my child, my loved one, if they were to get pulled over for any reason, they have this and it's just one more layer of comfort.
Certain Maine State Police offices will begin distributing the first round of envelopes this week. Picking up an envelope does not require proof of disability. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nick Song.
In other news, Central Maine Power and the state's public advocate have agreed to settle a dispute over the utility's storm recovery costs. CMP had asked state regulators to be reimbursed $117 million for its efforts to restore power after multiple storms in 2022. Under a new settlement, the burden on ratepayers will be reduced by $850,000. Public advocate attorney Brian Marshall says the 2022 storm costs will be incorporated in ratepayer bills next January.
They will see a slightly smaller increase than they would have had, the full $117 million gone into rates. But, we're the first to admit that that's going to be relatively small. You're talking about, cents on each customer's bill.
But as part of the settlement, the utility agreed to update its emergency response plan and work with the public advocate on a plan to prevent power outages from happening during future storms. In a statement, CMP says this planning work will benefit ratepayers and Maine as a whole. The Public Utilities Commission is expected to approve the settlement on Tuesday. And high school graduation rates in Maine have rebounded in the past 3 years. According to the Maine Department of Education, more than 87% of high school seniors graduated last year. Rates had fallen significantly during the COVID-19 pandemic, but have now nearly returned to their pre-pandemic high. Heather Manchester, the superintendent for the Oxford Hills School District, attributes the increase in her district to a new program called Building Assets, Reducing Risks, in which teachers and staff closely track each student in 9th and 10th grade.
And we know that when students are successful in their 9th grade year, they're much more likely to graduate.
The state has also extended a program allowing some students to still receive a diploma even if they experienced a significant disruption in their education. Despite the overall positive numbers, students who are economically disadvantaged, homeless, or in foster care still graduate at much lower rates. The late Dr. Bernard Laun, the pioneering cardiologist and Nobel Prize-winning advocate for social change, lived in Lewiston as a boy and has said the experience helped to shape the person he became. Laun, who died in 2021, is the latest subject of an ongoing series of portraits recognizing courageous citizenship called Americans Who Tell the Truth. Caitlin Bedayan has more.
Artist Robert Shetterly says his series focuses on individuals who have encouraged others to achieve the true ideals of democracy, and that Laun is a prime example of that.
He thought that his primary duty, as a healer, was to save the world from destroying itself, to actually save not just a person at a time, but, whole countries at a time. In fact, all species at a time.
Laun was born in Lithuania in 1921, and his family immigrated to the United States when he was 14 to escape anti-Semitism and the growing Nazi movement. The family settled in Lewiston, where Laun attended high school and went on to study zoology at the University of Maine. At the unveiling of his portrait Friday in Lewiston, University of Maine President Joan Farini-Mundy said that while she never met Laun, his influence is still recognized on campus.
He wanted to make a difference in the world, and he did. He inspired our students to make their own paths, and in his words, he saw people as the ultimate arbiters of their own destinies.
Laun continued his studies at Johns Hopkins Medical School, becoming a cardiologist, and played a hand in developing numerous medical milestones. He was one of the inventors of the defibrillator, organized one of the first coronary care units to prevent heart rhythm disorders, and founded Satellife, an organization that used satellites to provide medical information to doctors in other countries. But to Lown, medicine was more than just treating physical ailments. He often spoke of the need to address social and economic issues that contributed to health problems, as he did in this 2008 interview with Maine Public Television.
Well, I think they are not separate. I think if you care for a person as a patient, you must care for the survival of humankind.
Lown went on to found Physicians for Social Responsibility and International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, both aimed at stopping the spread of nuclear weapons and the threat of nuclear war. Emma Lown, the youngest grandchild of the Lown family, also spoke at the portrait unveiling in Lewiston.
This exhibit is the embodiment of who he was. Always concerned with how we could do better as people for the betterment of ourselves, our family, our community, and the world.
Emily Kane, a former Maine State Senator and friend of Lown's, says he was the first person to tell her she should go into politics. And he continued to push her to make a difference throughout their friendship. She recalls a speech he gave in 1992 to the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War.
At the end of his remarks, he says, "Finally, I continue to brim with pessimism about the past, which no one can alter. My optimism for the future remains undiminished, since we can help shape it."
In recognition of Lown's contributions to medicine and world peace, the bridge connecting Lewiston and Auburn was renamed the Bernard Lown Peace Bridge in 2008. In the same interview with Maine Public Television, Lown said he sees it as a symbol of his life's work.
Symbolic in the sense that my aim was always to connect. Mm-hmm. To connect human beings with one another, the patient with the doctor with the patient, the Soviet with the American, the poor world with the rich world, to create that connection, to create bridges. So it's, in a way, again, emblematic of what my life was all about.
The full Americans Who Tell the Truth gallery can be found online at americanswhotellthetruth.org, and the Bates Mill in Lewiston will host the collection in November. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badayan.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning, we'll talk about the benefits of walking in Maine. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.